Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Stuff I Heard podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Peek, and I want to say thank you for all of the kind comments on the last podcast. I talked a little bit about myself, which I tend not to do on a regular basis for a reason. The past is the past, and you move forward, and you try to pick the right path for yourself, right? That's one of the reasons that I'm fascinated with TV shows and movies and things of that nature, where there's like multiple universes and multiple pathways, and you know, the idea of sliding doors. What if I'd have chosen this path versus the other path? What if I'd have opened this door and gone through it instead of walking down this hallway and going through this other door? There is that question, right? We all have those questions. We all have those pinnacle moments in life. I remember the Robert Frost poem, The Path Less Taken, and the path less taken, it often makes a difference. That is true. But do you always need to take the path less taken? That was sort of my question that I had for myself when I was deciding whether or not to join the Army or the Marine Corps back in, you know, 1994. Was, yeah, I'm feeling like I'm being true to myself with this idea of where I'm going and what I'm doing. And it is sort of romantic in the idea of the path less taken, which is not lost on me. And I know that a lot of people don't feel that way. They join for different reasons. They do decisions for different reasons. But for me, at that time in my life, it was really about what could I do different? What could I change? What could I alter about my life that I want to change? And you hope that along the way, you make decisions that are correct for you. That never stops for me. That's always going on. I am a CDL delivery driver trainer for a food company, very large food company. And in doing so, I had to get a CDL and I had to become very proficient at what I do. And so in that, when we're going down the road, I'm telling people all the time to look as far as you can see down the road to anticipate things that are going to become hazards, dangers, things that are going to cause you to have a problem. And if you can prepare to miss that problem, then you're driving as safely as possible. And sometimes that means that you take your foot off the gas and you prepare to stop. You have your foot hovering the brake or touching the brake because you know that any moment now you're going to have to hit the brake and make a move. Anytime I see a trail of brake lights suddenly light up, or I see some hazard lights on the side of the road and people are swerving, my instinct is, ho, 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 stop, stop, stop. Let's get over. Let's look out for this danger, this problem that's going to come up. And so in life, like, I've made decisions that way. I've tried to guide myself and the people around me as closely to that as I can without even thinking about it. Sort of like how that recruiter told me that he doesn't necessarily pick Marines. Marines just choose to join. He said that, you know, in life, you either are a Marine or you're not. I've come in contact with people in my life and in my job that I currently have where I'd say to myself, man, that person would have made a great Marine. The choices that they make and the paths they take are often reflective of the things that I came into contact with when I served. And that carries over to other jobs. Recently, I applied for a position within my company and I got an email yesterday saying they chose to go a different path. Now, my first reaction was to be upset because I was never interviewed. It just seems awkward and wrong that a position would be considered without even interviewing candidates. I wanted to be upset. I wanted to reach out to the people who made the decision and asked them why I wasn't even considered or why an interview never happened. And I know the answer. I know the answer is they already chose to go with someone else before they even put the position up. I was never going to be their choice for this. But I didn't know that going into it. When I went into it, I thought that I legitimately had a chance to change jobs and do something a little bit different, maybe a little bit safer. Something I could do long-term, more than what I'm doing now. What I'm doing now is fine for me now. Like, I'm in the truck driving down the road and I can feel there's danger up ahead. I can feel that I'm getting older. I can feel that life is moving at an accelerated rate towards something that is going to be difficult for me in the future to physically do. I'm worried about my eye. I'm worried about my physical ability. I'm worried about the fact that, you know, I'm getting closer and closer to 50, and having a physical job does not get easier the older you get. I have the mental capacity to do the things that are necessary and to continue to teach the people to do things that I know how to do. But the physical part of it worries me that I'm not going to be able to do it the older I get. Of course, I am blessed in the fact that I am constantly on a truck anyway, and I'm constantly being physical so that I have maintained a certain physicality so that when I'm asked to do things, I'm able to. And I know that there's some people my age that don't or can't because life has steered them in a different direction. I joke all the time when I'm out there working in the rain that, man, I should have become a dentist. No part of me wanted to become a dentist, but it is kind of entertaining to think, sure would be nice to work indoors and only work certain days of the week. And you get to tell people, nah, I got to have that day off. You can reschedule. There's just a certain romantic part of it. I know the actual part of it is you digging in people's mouths, and most of them aren't brushing like they should, and most of them aren't flossing like they should. And a lot of people have jacked up teeth with jacked up scenarios inside their mouth, and you got to somehow fix it. And if you screw up, you can really hurt somebody. And I know the job is way more difficult than it sounds, but it's entertaining to joke about with people when I'm out on a route. But I wondered, like looking back, what is this sliding door mentality that I have, and why is it fascinating to me? And I take it all back to a series of books that were really popular in the mid to late 80s called Choose Your Own Adventure. My friend Rodney Aspiris, I met him on the playground when we were 12 years old. I had just moved to Florence, South Carolina, and so had he. And he ran up and hit me on the arm and goes, "Tag, you're it." And I chased him. And the more we hung out, the more I thought, I like this guy. He's really cool. And for whatever reason, we kept hanging out. And he was into reading the books at the time, and he got me into reading the books, Choose Your Own Adventure. So basically, the books would start off, we would get, you know, start off a story with a scenario, and you had choices at the bottom of the page. And it said, if you want to try this choice, turn to this page. If you like this other choice, turn to this other page. And you would follow this wormhole of ideas down these pathways that would change your story to cater towards the ideas of what you chose. And sometimes you would read through a scenario and you'd make choices and you get to the end and it was very dissatisfying. And you go, well, crap, that didn't turn out like I thought, which is kind of a lesson for life, looking back. Hang on, let me drink some coffee. But sometimes it would have a scenario where you go, whoa, that was really cool. That turned out way cooler than I thought. But there is that idea of, what if I chose the other path? And to me, that was the genius of the whole thing. The question, what if I'd have chose the other path? I think that's a question that we ask ourselves oftentimes, and we don't always have the answers. But what if I'd chosen the other path? Kept coming up to the point that you would go back in the book and you would read the other parts and you would randomly select other things that you go, well, I'd never do that, but let's read that part anyway because it sounds really cool and I like the book so far. And it would lead you down paths that sometimes were surprisingly good or surprisingly bad. And the brilliance of it was it compelled the reader to continue to read the entire book. Before you knew it, you'd read the entire book. Whereas if it was one story, it would have been boring. I mean, I think those books were maybe about 100 and so pages, maybe just over 100 pages. And if it was just a short story, there'd be like, you know, 15-page long stories. And you'd be like, well, that was dumb. But the element of choice was what compelled us. It's kind of like life, right? If you knew your life was going to be set out in a certain path of, yeah, I was born, I have these parents, I grew up in this neighborhood, I had these friends, I went to this school, and at some point I'm going to become this, and that's what I do the rest of my life. you'd look at that and you go, yeah, I don't want that. I want a choice. And so we're given choices. We're given choices all the time. Right now with this job, I'm passed up because I wasn't given the opportunity to even try, which rubs me the wrong way, I'll be honest. But at the same time, I have faith. Now, here's the weird part is I can't quantify it in any terms that makes sense to someone who doesn't have faith. But I have faith. So I believe that God has a plan for me. I believe that God knows what it is I'm going through or what I'm thinking or what my choices might be. And has said, no, now's not the time. There's a different path for you. And I have faith that it will turn out the right way because it has every step of the way. Even the choices that I felt like I wanted that didn't turn out the way I wanted ended up being for something much better. So I have faith. Now, is it going to affect my choices going further? Well, sure. It's hard not to say that it won't. It'd be silly to say that it won't. But now I know I have choices that are different. I have information that's different. So I go on a new path. Choices. So let's talk about movies, okay? This is stuff I heard. I watched a few things. The Book of Boba Fett, obviously I'm a big fan of on Disney Plus. We're in the third episode now, I think. Yeah, episode three. And in this, we see a flashback again of Boba Fett trying to help out the Tusken warriors who saved him in the desert and who helped train him to become a fighter without his weapons. And now that he's supposedly over the old Jabba the Hutt crime syndicate in Tatooine, he has choices. He has adversity coming his way. He has people that are after him. There's a bigger plot unfurling ahead of him. He has another bounty hunter that was sent by Jabba's twin cousins to come kill him. Everybody's calling him the Black Chewbacca because he looks like Chewbacca but with black hair. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Black Chrysantan? 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 Black Chrysantan? Yeah. Anyway, this other Wookiee-looking dude tried to kill him, and he put him in the jail, in the dungeon pit underneath Jabba's palace. And he gets confronted shortly thereafter by Jabba's twin cousins, the two Hutts, and they tell him, sorry, we tried to kill you. We have recently learned that you're not our enemy, that this territory has been promised to another by the mayor of this town to these other people. And these other people are pretty bad. These other people are, they're called Pikes. And they're in charge of this spice trade thing, which is like a big industry in the Star Wars universe. It's very similar to Dune. This spice stuff can apparently cause hallucinations and can also be used as fuel for starships to travel through warp speed and, you know, across the galaxy. And without this spice, they can't do it. So it makes these people very rich. So upon realizing that, they tell him, listen, our conflict is no longer with you. And, you know, if you want to kill him, you can. If you want to let him go, you can. So Boba Fett has a choice. This bounty hunter who came to kill him, he can kill him or he can put him back in the dungeon or whatever. And he decides to let him go. And he tells him, he says, listen, old friend. He calls him old friend because they were bounty hunters together during a certain time. He tells him, listen, old friend, I'm going to let you go. My conflict isn't with you. No hard feelings, right? And he lets him go. Now, you ask why. Why did he let him go? This guy tried to kill him. The guy was just doing a job. And right there in front of what he thought was his enemies, he realizes, and they realize, we're not really at enemies. We're not really at each other. Our thoughts of trying to off each other is silly because we're no longer enemies. And so he lets him go. Now, that's going to come back later because I guarantee you that creature, I wish we get a name for him rather than just call him the Black Chrysanthemum. That's such a difficult name to even pronounce for me. Let's call him, instead of Black Chewbacca, we call him Blue Baca. No, that's terrible. Let's not do that. Shaft. We call him Shaft. That's a bad man. What you talking about? That's Shaft. Shaft. That may be copyright infringement. Yeah, we can't do that. Anyway, we'll come up with a name. We can call him Shaq, like Shaquille O'Neal, because he's a big dude. I wonder if that is Shaq inside of there. That'd be interesting, right? I mean, this dude's got to be over 6 foot six. He's a big dude. Anyway, I don't know who's playing the character, but it's pretty cool. But yeah, Boba Fett had to make a choice. So he chose, let him go. And he then has to choose what to do next. He's conflicted with a problem. Someone of one of the people of this territory who's supposed to come to him with problems of the city to pay tribute, they give him things. And the trade-off is you need to do me a favor. And he tells about these people who are stealing from him. So he goes down there to investigate and finds out that the guy who came to them with the problem is the one who's overcharging for things to the point that no one can afford it. And he realizes that these people just need an opportunity. So he decides to hire these people who are mechanically enhanced. They have mechanical parts here and there to help them become better versions of themselves. One guy's got like a bionic eye, one of them has a bionic arm, you know, so on and so forth. And they're saying basically that this guy is selling water on a planet that's a desert planet, and he's charging so much that no one can afford water. And he's like, listen, we've had to steal this stuff because we can't afford it because he's raised the prices so high. So Boba Fett, feeling like he's needing to take advantage of the situation, tells the guy, lower your prices. And if I hear of anything crazy going on different, I'm going to come back here. And he gives the people a job, the people who are stealing. He gives them a job. He realizes he needs to give an opportunity to these people. And also, he sort of needs a crew. I mean, now, the crew happens to ride these little hoverboard motorcycle-looking things that look dumb, okay? For everything that Star Wars has done right with special effects and everything else, these are dumb. These look dumb. The way they move are dumb. It's a cool idea. It probably would have been much, much cooler as an animated series, but it just physically looks stupid. Okay. I'm just saying, I know, listen, I'm not a science fiction special effects kind of person. I am not the person to create special effects. I know that it's very technical the way they do this kind of stuff. It just looks stupid. Just saying. Okay. The mayor's assistant is driving around this cool hovercraft looking thing that looks like a 71 Lincoln if it were hovering. It's pretty cool. It's got some neat looking lines to it. It'd be a neat looking hot rod to drive around. But the motorcycle things hovering just looks stupid with them riding on it. I'm just saying. They've done so many things right. This one, choices, right? Somebody made a really awful choice. So, all right, I'm not going to Star Wars you guys to death. I know people are like, I don't like Star Wars. Why do you always talk about Star Wars? I like it, okay? It answers a lot of those weird questions that I have about myself. What are my choices? What are the things that I'm going to do? So let's talk about a movie, okay? I watched two big movies. First, I want to talk about Don't Look Up. It's on Netflix. It is a crazy movie. It is star-studded. Right off the bat, you see Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Meryl Streep, Kate Blanchett, and on and on and on and on. Jonah Hill. I mean, the characters in this are incredible. There's a lot of people that are in this. Tyler Perry's in this. The show is basically about a scientist who's looking through a telescope and spots a comet. And, oh, wow, surprising comet. I've discovered this comet. This is great news. This is awesome. And then they discover that the comet is headed directly on a path to Earth. then it's a, oh no, we got to tell the world that the world's going to end in like 6 months and 13 days. I'm going to give the whole movie away. So if you're going to watch this, don't. Or do. I don't care. Don't, but don't listen to this part, okay? So from that point on, they go to let the president know, and the president is oblivious that it's important and is like, yeah, so it's not really going to hit us. Listen, we have a lot of things. There's constantly things that are threatening the world, and we got to take it seriously. We got to take it all seriously, but seriously, this is not a big deal. And they're like, no, listen, this is the science. It's going to happen. And so the rest of the movie is basically how crazy politics can get and how crazy people's ideologies can get. They at a certain point decide that instead of blowing it up like they had drawn up a plan to do, which they don't even do in the beginning, they wait until it gets to where people suddenly know it's coming from everywhere because they can see it. They get to the point where they're going to blow it up and they go, wait a second. We could mine this thing and like it's worth a lot of money because of the rare minerals. Think of the technology we could get from it. And so they change their plan. They alter their plan and through policy and politics decide not to save the earth, but then to try to harvest stuff from this comet that's going to hit the earth. And the whole time I'm watching this, I'm thinking, God, this is so stupid and so probable. Every one of these choices and these people is so out there and so crazy and so real because it mirrors a lot of the craziness that we see right now in our own political system. Whether you're Democrat or Republican or whatever, does not matter. Okay. Oftentimes your job is just to sell your party's line because you need the money and your party tells you what you're going to do. And so you realize at a certain point that you're on this absurd roller coaster of things and you've got no choice but to continue to say the thing that they tell you to say or to tote the party line or to maneuver it in a way that makes you look better for votes. It's crazy. It's almost like this movie has nothing to do with the comet destroying the earth and everything to do with how screwed up our political system is. And yeah, it's a crazy movie. There's so many parts of it that you're literally just shaking your head going, people can't be that stupid, right? Oh yeah, yeah, they totally can. And they are. There's a lot of people in charge with this. A lot of people writing on this. A lot of people. Adam McKay created this. I've seen his name in a lot of things that I like. And I didn't like this, but I respect it, if that makes any sense. I know some people are going to watch this and be like, oh man, it was so fascinating. Yeah, that fascinating is a word I would use. I don't know that like is a word I'd use. So anyway. I also watched The Eternals. Oh, geez. There's so many things wrong with The Eternals, okay? If you guys don't know, The Eternals is a Marvel adventure movie, more superhero stuff. It's a lot of really great actors and really great special effects and not that really great of a story. I was impressed with the special effects. I was impressed with the ability of the show to keep some sort of stream of consciousness, even with all the chaos of them supposedly being eternal, quote unquote, eternal. And if you're going to watch this movie, that's fine. Have fun with it, I guess. I didn't like it. I didn't have fun with it. I didn't enjoy it at all. So I'm just going to spoil it right here. Okay. If you want to watch it, go watch it and then come back and listen to this part. You can just pause it right here and come back and watch and listen to it. So the whole idea of the Eternals is there's these beings out in outer space called celestials. And celestials create planets and people and all life therein. They're basically gods in this scenario. And these celestials also create eternals. Now, the eternals, all their life, think they come from a place called Mount Olympia, and that they have these godlike powers, and that they can live forever, and that they can help people advance civilization towards something better. They're there to protect, they're on Earth to protect the humans, or so they think. And one of the celestials, or one of the eternals, knows the real story because she speaks with the celestial all the time. The goal that they don't even realize they have is to advance the civilization far enough to where their information and technology and life in general, the life force itself, can help spawn another celestial, which is a seed inside of the planet. And in doing so, the celestial bursts from the planet, destroying all life on that planet to become another celestial, because they know that life on the planet will eventually extinguish, and the celestial will then create more life. Sort of the cycle of life kind of thing, you know? But think about it as like a farmer thinking, I got to tend to this crop because that crop creates another crop, and I need this crop to turn the soil so that the soil then can be formidable and favorable for a different crop. And so you don't learn that until far into the movie. And at that point, you're past the point of caring. There's a lot of great actors in it. But they, to me, they just don't jive well together. It's almost like they had no chemistry whatsoever. Except for Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh, to me, was awesome. Kumail Nanjiani is in it, and he is fantastic in it. He's the comedy relief in the show. He's got a guy he calls his valet, and this guy is constantly filming him because he decided to become a movie star. And his character is ridiculous and funny and good. Like, I like his character. But beyond those two characters, I really didn't care about any of them. Like, they didn't draw me in. I still think it was the right people and the right casting, but I think that this would have been better as a series, because you need to give a crap about any of them to give a crap about all of them. That's one thing that Marvel has done really well with the Iron Man and the Thor and the different movies that have come out along the way, to make you care about these characters so that when they interact with each other, you kind of know who they are. That's one thing that DC had done wrong when they came out with Suicide Squad. And you're like, yeah, I don't care who any of these people are. Like, it's just the story gets lost in the, who is that person and what are they doing? I mean, maybe it works for, you know, to kids today when the TikTok brain of ADD, fast information, let's move forward. All right, got it, go. I get it. Maybe that works for them. This didn't work for me. So anyway, there is an interesting video that people have out on the internet about Thanos doing the snap and reducing the population of the universe by half, that maybe his snap is what saved the worlds from all becoming celestials, that maybe he was postponing this inevitable, even though he says it is inevitable, and he snaps his fingers. That's an interesting idea. But again, there's just not enough information for you to give a crap. If you're watching this, you're just like, oh, look, there's Angelina Jolie. Didn't she have breast cancer? Didn't she have like palsy on her face? You can't even see the Bell's palsy. Oh, Gilgamesh. He's cool. I like him. Yeah. He kind of looks like the guy from Doctor Strange. That's his buddy from the temple. There's Kumail. Man, he got jacked. Is that Rob Stark? That is Rob Stark. Holy crap. He looks good. The gray hair suits him. I dig it. Oh, I know that girl. She's from Humans. Yeah. And, okay, the girl that's really fast is deaf. And she's got sign language. I'm going to have to read the caption. Okay, cool. Got it. Got it. Oh, look, and it's the King of the North. Yeah, from Game of Thrones. Neat. Oh, so, hey, they got brothers on there. Yeah, Robb Stark and the King of the Night, the King of the North. Yeah. Okay. Jon Snow. Oh, wait, they're telling a story. Shit, I got to pay attention to the story. That's kind of what I was thinking the whole time watching this. I was like, yeah, okay. I don't, none of this is capturing me. None of this is pulling me in. The story sucked. The story needed to be told better. They screwed up. I mean, Marvel's done a lot of cool things. Up to now, I feel like they've knocked it out of the park. This one, dud. So anyway, let's talk about the one thing I watched that I thought was, it's hard to say good. Worth mentioning? Yeah. The Unforgivable with Sandra Bullock. It's on Netflix. This is the kind of movie that you give someone an award for, even though it's not necessarily her acting that the award should be for. I think it's the screenwriting, the way they told the story. The story is the compelling part. The movie has lots of people in it that you'll recognize right off the bat, obviously, Sandra Bullock. You got Vincent D'Onofrio, who plays a lawyer on there. You got Johnny Bententhal, who becomes like a friend to her. There's a lot of people that you go, oh, I know them. Hey, cool. And the story is crazy. Okay, so if you're going to watch Unforgivable, turn it off right here because I'm going to talk about that. And then after you watch it, come back and listen. So Sandra Bullock, right off the bat when the movie starts, she's coming out of jail for supposedly killing a cop. And everyone's calling her cop killer. And she served 20 years in prison for good behavior. She got out. And now she's supposed to get her life back together. And she's got a handler who's telling her, I'll help you get a job. You're going to live in this halfway house. And here's the rules of things you can't do. And she just wants to see her sister. She keeps saying over and over again, I want to see my sister. I haven't seen her since she was 5. I've written her so many letters and she hasn't gotten, I don't know if she's gotten any of them. I don't even know if she's okay. I want to make sure she's okay. And they keep showing you flashbacks to what happened. She looks like in the flashback sequences that she might have been maybe 11 or 12, 13, something like that. And her sister at the time was 5. And you learn from watching the show that her mother had apparently died giving childbirth to the sister, and that her father had committed suicide. And then at some point, the state was coming to kick them out of their house and put them into foster care. And when the cops were coming, she was on the phone with people saying, I don't want to be broken up for my sister. I want to stay here. There was a gun against the side of the thing. And the police chief was coming in the back door. And there's a big reveal at the very end where you find out that the little sister kills the cop. Now, you don't learn that till the very end. So again, if you're listening to this now, I just ruined it for you. But also, I warned you not to listen to this part, okay? I told you. If you're going to watch it, stop the thing and then come back and listen to it. So the whole movie, you're thinking she's the one who killed the cop. They don't reveal that till the very end. They keep showing you this part. They keep saying, I'm the cop killer. I killed the cop. I did it. It was me. I just want to see my sister. And she has a really tough go of life from that point on. She went to jail for 20 years because she said she was the one who killed the cop because she was afraid for her sister. I mean, the sister was 5. They wouldn't have put her in jail, but she didn't know that. She was a kid. Viola Davis is in this too. Again, star-studded cast. The movie is powerful. The movie is crazy. There's lots of scenarios in it that come up that are just holy crap kind of scenarios. It's not a feel-good movie. So I feel weird saying it was a good movie. But it was a good movie. I mean, they did a good job of it. It was a great story. It's not even, Okay, the story was awesome. The word great is not really necessary here. But the whole time I'm watching it, I'm thinking about choices. The choices we make. And how sometimes we choose wrong. Sometimes we choose what we think is best. And it may turn out for the better in the long run, but maybe not. So, with that being said, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm in the middle of choices every day. Every day. We all make choices. Dr. Drew once said that in general, we make about 90 choices a day. Some of them are small, like which pants am I going to put on? Which sock am I going to put on first? What am I going to eat for lunch? Should I go to the bathroom now or wait till later? I mean, little, whatever. Some of them are big choices. Do I take this job? Do I apply for this position? Do I go for a run today? Do I eat this healthy snack? Do I have this beer? We make 90 choices a day in general. Those choices over time are no longer choices from your parents. Those choices are your choices. You are a product of your parents at a certain point. But after a little while, it's all you. Your choices are your own. So I guess my motivation and statement here is try to make your best choices. And when you don't have the right idea of what to choose, maybe pray about it. Maybe have faith. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have faith. I think that will serve me better in the long run. So, tonight, I'm going to Charlotte, North Carolina to see Tom Segura at the Ovens Auditorium. If you're there, give me a shout out on social media. It'd be great. We're going to take pictures and video, and it'll be fun. We're not going to film the event, but we're going to have fun up to that point and then hang out up there for a little while, and it should be great. We're expecting some inclement weather coming our way on Sunday. I'm going to make sure I'm back here before I get caught in that weather, hopefully. And we'll go from there. Okay. Hope everybody enjoyed this. I know this wasn't the normal pace that I do, but I was feeling a little bit slower today. Had the day off and got a shower and enjoying some coffee and just decided to slow down a little bit. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to be part of the podcast, let me know. We'll do one together and we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. And we'll see what we can do with our choices. Okay. Thanks for listening. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, share with your friends. That's how we grow the podcast. And as always, cue the cow.